Short and sweet with 42nd Street Pete. And here's your host, Pete Chiarella, only on Jackalope Radio.
We are live. It's Friday night, and before I start the show, I'd be remiss if I didn't mention my friend Al Goldstein, who passed away this Thursday after a long illness. Honestly, if it wasn't for Al and Eric Danville and a couple other guys in New York City, there wouldn't ever be a 42nd Street Pete, because those are the guys who let me in the office to do the research, and that's what segued into what I'm doing today. So definitely down the road, we're going to have a tribute for Al, so rest in peace, Al Goldstein. But on the bigger and badder things, welcome back to the show, prime time, Amy Lee.
What's up, 42nd Street Pete?
Been a long time.
I know, dude. Yeah. What, you don't fucking like me anymore now that I'm retired from wrestling? I'm like an old grizzly fucking veteran?
No. I took a hiatus for a while, then I came back in this new time slot, new format.
You fucked the hyena.
Yeah, well, I've done that, too. Hiatus, you know.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm getting old.
I retired like a lot of wrestlers do, then I came back.
Ah, you cut back, huh?
Yeah.
Aw.
So, what have you been doing since the last time I saw you? You were like the commissioner at WSU, and since then
They fired me.
They fired you?
They fired me. Everybody fires me.
They
fired me. What happened was that Sean the Mix sold the business, and he was going to buy a bar, which he probably would drink the profits. I always tell him that, though. But anyway, so the people that were taking it over, they were supposed to keep the roster and keep the storylines going and stuff like that. So they had offered me my same position, and they said to me, this is what they said to me. What do you do there? And I'm like, well, eventually they'll know the fucking company if you're asking me what I do there. Because I would help the girl with the promos. And I'll be honest, I would tell them girls if they looked like shit going to the ring. Like, I don't like that outfit on you, your guts hanging over. Do your fucking hair. Or put some makeup on. Or put some lip gloss on. Like, I would get in the girls' asses and stuff. Because I strongly believe if you're going to charge somebody, you're going to charge one of these little fucking horny perverts $10 for a glossy 8x10, you better look like that fucking photo. You know what I mean? Like, don't get, like, all airbrushed and looking gorgeous and everything in this photo, and then I look at you, and you're, like, fucking Fright Night in person. That's not right. I'm not giving you $10. Like, are we serious? Like, $10 is, like, those guys, like, fucking lunch money for the week, you know? So, I told them, you know, like, I would help them with the promos, and I did, like, a lot of backstage stuff, you know? Like, Mick pretty much, like, had me go backstage stuff and all, and then I would just come out and be, like, the face of the company and all, because I could get away with it because of my public speaking skills, and then the fact, you know, from working in law firms and things, I would have the business suit and stuff like that, so it came across very well, because it was, like, a combination of, of Clark, looking like Clark Kent, but being super bitch, you know? And it went over, and people liked it, and then the new owners, they were doing a show up in New York, and I wasn't able to go because I had just started a new position at Hawthorne Family Wealth Management, which is under PNC Bank Corporation. So I had to do some training and things like that, and it required me to go to Pittsburgh. So I contacted them as soon as I found out, and I told them. Once I told them that, they fucking fired me. They never used me again. Then they were running down here with CZW for a while. And a lot of the girls that were on the roster, they weren't using. They were using local Yahoos and stuff like that. And, you know, DJ Hyde was getting involved. And then, from what I understand now, DJ Hyde bought it. And they call themselves Women's Superstars.
Unlimited.
What the fuck's that mean, you know?
Exactly.
So I was like, all right, whatever. But I don't even think they're using, like, Mercedes Martinez anymore or anything like that. I think maybe they're just using Jessica Havoc and Janet, if any of the original rosters, which is a shame because they had a lot of good talent there, and the girls were coming from New York and stuff. So it was a shame, and I felt bad for everybody, but, you know, what are you going to do? And I was like, all right, whatever. So
I know.
So then Missy Sampson was working for Pro Wrestling Syndicate, and they started out with a company called Bombshells Ladies of Wrestling, which Blow. So I kind of like laughed at the name because I worked for a company down in Tennessee called Blow, but it was called Beautiful Ladies of Wrestling, and it was a totally different company and owners and stuff like that. And I was like, ah, I like the name. It's kind of cool. It's catchy, you know, especially with these perverts and stuff like this. You know, sex sells. So they brought me in to work Kong. Well, I mean, they gave me my price I asked for. I have to honestly say that Eric Pulaski always treated me very well and stuff like that. So they paid me and all. I'm like, Kong, I like Kong, and she's a good girl. But then she started that old school, let me shake you down for more money shit. And then she would say to you, I have no problem doing this for you since you're putting me over. And then she would say to the promoter, well, I really can't do that. So I was like, are you fucking kidding me? Like, seriously, dude? And then she would say to me, I'm going back to WWE. And I'm like, you ain't going back to fucking WWE. If you're going back to WWE, I'm becoming a fucking thong model. And everybody sees my photos and knows I'm a fucking thong model, you know? And I'm like, all right, whatever. And she's like, yeah, I'm going to get back to her. I'm going to do this. I'm going to do that and all. And I was like, all right. And then, like, you know, she would do tours, and she wouldn't show up for tours. And, like, she was a hot mess for a while. I think after losing her baby, she went into, like, a depression and just wasn't admitting it to herself, you know, because I don't care who you are. Your fucking baby dies. That's going to fuck you up. And I felt bad for her, you know, because she really is a good person. She has a good heart and a good spirit, and she's a lot of fun. But I just think this tragedy in her life has just really fucked her up where she can't get back on track. And it's a shame because she has a lot of talent. So, you know, I don't really know what she does these days. I think she just does overseas tours, you know, here and there, and that's about it. I know she did the Double Divas TV show about big girls with bras, but that's about it. I don't really see her name or hear anything, and I haven't heard from her in a while or anything like that. So it's a shame, you know. These girls. Yeah. See, the one thing I never did, and this was something that was instilled in me by my parents, and then instilled in me again by Dennis Anthony Coraluzzo Sr., and then re-instilled into me by Uncle Dickie Murdoch, was as quick as you're in is as quick as you're out. And you need to fall back on something. Education, job. You can't do this forever. You may do this for 20 years. You may do this for 30 years full time. Eventually, when you're done, you need something to fall back on. And that's what happens to a lot of these people that are in the fucking limelight. It's like that song, you know, I want to be a rock star, you know, eat my meals for free and sign a picture for a meal that I can eat for free. That's what these guys did. They would take pictures with people in the restaurants, the owners and all, and the owners would put it up on the wall because it makes them look good with their business. And, yeah, you're giving them free meals and all, but then what happens when their name's out of the limelight and they show up, you're like, ah, fuck that motherfucker, he pays full price. You know, it's kind of fucked up if you think about it. You know?
Yeah, I know. I know a lot of people in wrestling, and I know a lot of people, you know, that, you know, are in the movie business, and it's the same thing. You know, when you're hot, you're hot. When you're not, forget about it. You'll be doing,
right,
you know, ridiculously cheap, crappy.
My first 10 years, I worked a lot down south, you know, on the independence and stuff. I didn't do much up here because I did my first year here, and then Dennis Coraluzzo said to me, "Aim, you can't stay in this area because what's going to happen is you're going to be popular in this area and then you're not going to be popular anywhere else. You need to branch out." So that's when I would go down to guys like Dick Karakoff and Johnny Rambo who were they worked like the Western Pennsylvania, like Pittsburgh area and West Virginia and Virginia area and part of Maryland. So I would branch out to them, and then I would branch out to North Carolina, Georgia, Tennessee, you know, different things like that, a little bit down to Texas, you know, the Fort Worth, Dallas area, Texas and stuff. So I would, like, branch out. And then people were booking me to work, like, Kansas City and Missouri and Mississippi. And then, you know, Coraluzzo got me in with USWA, and I worked for Jerry Lawler and stuff. So I worked a lot down there where I didn't really work much up here, whereas, you know, most people around here work up here. So when I came back, people were like, I don't know who the fuck Amy Lee is. I don't know who the fuck Amy Lee is. Because I was working independence. And you have to remember, when you were in the independence I started in 89. So when you were in the 90s, they really didn't cover, they covered some of the independence, but it was the bigger shows. And I didn't work the bigger shows. I worked, like, the smaller shows, and I worked for the smaller independents because I wanted to become better. And that's what I had to do, and that's what Murdoch would say to me. You got to build yourself up. If you go in there blazing saddle all the way up top, because all you have left for you is to go bottom, you have to work your way up. So you start out at the smaller shows and build and build, and your word of mouth will get you booked. And he says, trust me, they've been doing this for years. I understand I got TVs and all this stuff. He goes, but listen to what I'm telling you. I haven't been around this fucking long because I'm a stupid fucking motherfucker. And I was like, all right, no problem. So I listened to Murdoch, and that's what I did. I worked these smaller shows, and I worked for Karakoff, and I worked for Rambo, and I got my name in the magazines and my photos and stuff like that and different things. And then what happened was I came back in the area full-time because my father had gotten sickly, and my mother, you know, and he had passed away in 94. My mother took a stroke, and then she was diagnosed with a brain cancer that lingered for 6 years. So I physically and financially took care of my mother for 6 years. I'm not, no regrets or anything like that, but I had opportunities and tryouts for WWE, you know, at the time WWF and different things, and I shot them down because I had no one to take care of my mom. And people would tell me all the time, you're stupid for fucking doing it. That's a once in a lifetime opportunity. No, how I looked at it was, if I bailed on my mother who gave me fucking life, then what kind of person would you want to work for your company who didn't even give a fuck about their own mother? You know what I'm saying? I mean, let's use our common sense here. If you're going to fuck your own mother over, what the fuck am I going to do to you motherfuckers? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. No, you're right. Family comes first. You got to do the right thing. I mean, you know, I'm in the same boat taking care of my father when I was still in Jersey and stuff. You know, you got to put certain shit on the back burner and do what you got to do before that. That's the right thing.
You know, so, I mean, to me, women's wrestling has changed so much, so quickly, it's not funny. Like, for me, when I my mom had died in 2000, and it was like a fucking kick to my uterus where it knocked me out. It really did. It knocked me for a fucking, I knew eventually she was going to die, but still, that initial shock of your mother gone, you know what I mean? It's a horrible feeling. And the same thing with your father. You feel like a fucking orphan now. Like, you know, you feel like a misfit because you don't have parents. I mean, maybe not for everybody, but for me, that's how I felt at the time. And, you know, so I took some time off. And it was actually Dick Kirchhoff and John Rambo that brought me back into wrestling because I just pretty much got depressed and was like in 2000. And, like, I didn't go back into wrestling until, like, almost the summer of 2001. I was like, I don't want to fucking deal with no money. And different things like that, and it was them. So anyway, they turn around, and I worked for them, and it was me and Miss Kitty, and she was with Lawler at the time, and some other chick, and I don't remember the other chick's name, but the three of us, we did like a three-way, and of course we had to put Miss Kitty over, but she couldn't really do much, so we just like fucking let her kind of just like, you know, me and the other girl worked each other. The other girl, like, hit me with a big spot, and then she just fucking hit the other girl and then pinned me real quick, like a quick count. And then when but you know what was nice is when we were going over our match in the back, Jerry Lawler looked at Miss Kitty and said, you listen to what Amy Lee says because she knows what the fuck to do. Don't listen to the other girl, and don't try anything on your own. Listen to what she tells you because she knows what she's doing, and she will make you look like $1 million. Listen to her and her only. So I took that as a high compliment that Jerry gave me that respect and courtesy. Because, you know, he's not known for being, you know, locker room friendly and shit. So I appreciate it. So I did. I made her look like $1 million. And, of course, she got to sell all her little 8x10s and shit like that. And then it was a couple months later, she fucked Jerry over. I was like, real nice.
That's the nature of the business, unfortunately, it seems. It's, you know, even with, you know, the crap that we do, you know, we get fucked over here and there and everywhere. They hacked the station one time on the old show because they didn't like what I was going to say.
I believe it. You know, I'm not a yes person, and I don't have a filter. I'm not going to humor you, and I'm not going to say something because you want me to say, and in the sense that, all right, if I think you're a jerk off, I'm going to sit here, and I'm not going to tell you I think you're the greatest guy. I'm going to say, you know what, you're a fucking jerk off. And then from there, you could do whatever the fuck you want to do, you know?
I've seen you do it.
Yeah, I don't care. You know, what's the worst thing somebody's going to do? Not book me anymore? I don't give a fuck. I got a job that pays. I do this for fun now. I mean, like, seriously. You know, you know, everybody's so panicky that they're not going to work for a promotion anymore, or a promoter. If you don't want to fucking use me, don't use me. If you think I'm too fat, I'm too fat. If you think I'm too old, I'm too old. I don't really give a fuck. Because the bottom line is this. I was taught how to wrestle. I came in with a martial arts background, so I know how to fight. Okay? I know how to stretch people. I know how to grapple. A lot of these girls, they do that pretend shit. Okay? So if somebody goes and roughs them up in the ring, they don't know how to handle themselves. Not me. I was taught how to handle myself, and I worked with a very rough person. I was trained by a very rough man. He was very rough on people. So, you know, I was very blessed. I had a good foundation with my martial arts, and then another good foundation with the wrestling with Murdoch and stuff like that. You know, these girls don't have that. You know, everybody's like, you know, polite and courteous, which is fine, but, you know, God forbid, you know, somebody goes a little rough and they get all the ruffles feathered and, you know, they don't know what to do. Like, seriously? Somebody gets rough with me, I fucking hit them back, you know?
I remember.
Here's a receipt, bitch! Let me give you one for next week, you know? And I do, you know what? I can work light, but I can have a heavy paw. See, I'm one of them people, I'm very ornery. In a sense, I'll sit in that locker room, and if you are cool with me, like, I work Nikki Rocks. She's very respectful. She is a dynamite wrestler, very sweet girl, and very respectful. So, of course, I'm not going to be rough with her. I'm going to be very light with her. I'm going to be very cautious with her. I don't want to hurt Nikki. I have respect for Nikki. Okay? Same thing with Sarah Del Rey. Same thing with Simply Luscious. Same thing with Angel Orsini. Well, Angel Orsini's a different story. We used to like fucking one another up. But, you know, and Mercedes Martinez and Cindy Rogers and stuff like that. There's certain girls in Alicia you're light with. You know, you don't want to fucking get rough with it. But there's other girls like them fucking diva killers. You know, you're sitting there and you're just disrespectful and you're going to talk a whole bunch of shit and you're going to dictate to us and then you're going to do what you wanted to. Ah, fuck you. You know, I'll drop a motherfucker. I don't care. And I was. I will fuck. Listen, as Lord Steven Regal said, you hit hard and safe, please. I will drop a forearm on a motherfucker. And back then, I was putting 335 pounds behind it, so you know people were feeling it. Like, I did a mixed tag match up there at Seaside Heights for a guy named Dan Laurie. And I think it was American Wrestling Association or something like that, Federation or something, I don't know. But anyway, Dan used to work out with Artie Palmer at the time, my husband Artie Palmer at the time. Yeah, back in the day, I should say, back in, like, the 70s or 80s, whatever. So, you know, he was like, hey, I want to book you and stuff like that and all through, you know, because I met him through Doc Diamond. That's how Art and him reconnected talking and stuff. So, you know, he put us in a mixed tag, and I'm like, I think it was Chrissy, I can't remember, a little short Italian
Rivera.
Girl with... Yeah, that's it. And two guys, the Flying Hawaiian, some other guy, and it was me and Angel Gonzalez and Angel Pagan and another guy with the last name Pagan. I'm drawing a blank on him. But it was the three of us. So against those three. So they're calling all these spots, and they're going to do this, and they're going to do that. Well, first of all right, fine. You don't know who I am. I'm not offended. I really don't give a shit. My world will not come to an end. But you'll know my fucking name when we get done in the match. So they turn around and they totally, call this shit. They want to do all this shit. I whip the guy off the ropes, and before I throw the clothesline, he bumps. Well, the crowd looks at me. I look at the crowd, and I go, what a fucking pussy. I pick him up by the hair of the head, put him in a front choke lock, and I fucking jumped off. And this is when my ass was 335 pounds, and I laid those forearms into him. And he went to collapse, and I was wringing his neck back up, so I was choking him. So I'm strangling him with my left arm and a forearm with my right. And then I got so pissed off, I took my left knee and I fucking elbowed him right in the temple and dropped him. And I said, next time, don't pre-bump, you fucking pre-ejaculated cocksucker. You know, and then I tagged Angel Pagan in, and Angel Pagan went in there. Angel Gonzalez, he went in there and, you know, did his thing and stuff like that. Like, these guys are, you know, they want to do all these high spots and shit. They don't want to tell a story. They don't want to do it. They just got to get all their shit in. Like, I watched today in the locker room where these girls, all right, when we get in the ring, I'm going to do this, and I'm going to do this, and I'm going to do this. Then you can go and do this, and then I'm going to do this, and then, all right, I'm going to do that. They call every motherfucking thing they're going to do except when they're going to fart, piss, or shit in the ring. Uh-uh. I was raised, you talk about the opening spot, the takeover, and the finish. Everything else is filler. You throw, this is what I tell people all the time when I work them. You throw it, I'll fucking catch it. When they're calling a match by blow, I don't even pay attention. I'm like, what's my takeover spot? Okay, that's what I got to do. Okay, no problem. okay? And that's what I do. And then, all right, we're setting it up for the finish now. And I'll even tell everybody, all right, get ready. Like, when Kong and I had, when we worked for PWS the last time, we had a First Blood match. So I told the referee, when I fucking look up, you be there, because you're going to see the blood on my thing. And then what will happen is I'll argue with you, Kong will turn me around, DDT me on the chair, and pin me. No, that stupid motherfucker didn't pay attention, so he fucking blows the finish. So I'm, like, pounding on Kong and all, and I said, fuck it, cut me off, do the thing. So she does. And then when we get back in the locker room, I yelled at the referee, and he goes, no, that's not what you called. I go, let me ask you something. If I stand there and I throw my fucking head up where the whole place sees me bleeding, including you, don't you think you're supposed to stop the fucking match? And he, like, looked at me and go, aren't you? He goes, well, yeah. I go, well, then get your dick out of your brain, you cocksnot, cunny fucktard. I'm like, because you're supposed to end the match. You're not supposed to continue it. I said, you fucked the finish. Thank God we were intelligent enough to pull it off. And he, like, looked at me. I go, because had it been one of these green beans, you'd had a major fucking problem on your hand, you stupid cocksucker. And this is it. And this was an IPPV. This was an internet pay-per-view. I'm like, are you fucking kidding me?
Oh,
you
shit.
I'm like, you stupid cocksucker. I'm like, you know, I picked you because I thought you were the most seasoned referee. I'd have been better off with fucking Joe Show, the shit rag guy, for a fucking referee. Really? You stupid motherfucker.
Who was it? Anybody I know?
Oh, I don't even fucking remember his name now. Fuck him. You know? I was like, fuck it. Fuck it. And it's funny because the whole time backstage, they had this group, and there was this guy, Dimitri, and two other people, and they were filming us backstage at the last couple of shows. They were filming us for this reality show that they want to do about, you know, independent women's wrestling. People don't really understand what they go through and stuff and what they're really like and all. Like, you see the divas, and you know a lot of that shit on Total Divas is fake and bullshit.
Hell
and all.
Yeah.
Like, they want to show the raw footage like they did with The Wrestler, the movie, how they did it raw footage, and you thought it was like, you know what I mean, how they did it where it was, like, real.
Yeah.
You know, like, they were pretty on key with a lot of things. Well, that's what they want to do with this. So the girls are talking, and I'm watching them, and they're saying, like, they said, oh, how'd you get started? Oh, I watched Leader, I watched this one, and, you know, I really liked it, so I did it, and my boyfriend used to do it, so I tried it. And I'm, like, listening to these stories, and I'm just, like, rolling my eyes at them. Like, are you fucking kidding me? Like, seriously, you are about as fucking exciting as vanilla fucking paint. And I'm sitting there, and I'm, like, snoring, making fun of them, going, so Dimitri notices it. This is the producer, and he looks at me, and he says, well, how'd you get started in wrestling? I said, brother, I've been watching wrestling since I was knee-high to a grasshopper. I go, my mother was a catechism teacher for 20-some years, so we had to go to church on Saturday nights because Sunday she would teach CCD. I said, so 4 o'clock we would go to wrestling. I said, we would sit in the back of the church, and as Father Weber or Father Tut-Tut, I said, or Father O'Brien's coming out, at the end we were following him because we got home to watch 5 o'clock wrestling. So He turned around and he started laughing. So I was like, yeah, well, most girls were, singing in their little, you know, microphones or cheerleading. I said, I was cutting promos, you know. And I started, like, talking about, like, the old schoolers, like, Haystack Calhoun, Dusty Rhodes, Murdoch, you know, just different people, Bubba Zrill and all. I said, you know, like, back then, they didn't have pretty motherfuckers. Those guys were all rough. They were pretty motherfuckers. They were Michael P.S. Hayes, and if you looked at him back in the day, he really wasn't good-looking. It's just that he had the long hair, and he had a better body than someone like Dusty Rhodes or Murdoch, you know, and they were, like, laughing. So they were like, you know, how long have you been doing this and stuff? So, you know, they started coming over to me. So some of the girls got mad, and I would, like, bring the girls in on the conversation. Like, I would talk to them and stuff. Like, I kind of had to lead the girls to have a conversation because they didn't know how to talk. So they were asking me all kinds of questions, and then when they found out that I worked for a bank, they were like, and I was a certified paralegal, they were like totally blown away. So right now, Dimitri had called me, had sent me a contract and everything, and I had just signed it and everything. They have a meeting with some major television networks, and I'm not talking like ABC, NBC, or C. I'm talking about like A&E, Bravo, those kind of shows, those kind of networks. They have going on, and they said one of the biggest selling points was me because people were watching me, and they were like, "This is fucking great! Like, this is what reality TV should be like. Like, this girl is very charismatic and all. I always was a character, but they're like, you know, she talks very good. She's very entertaining. She's not boring. You know, she's very honest." Filter, like, they liked that, like, they said this was good for TV. And I'm saying to myself, yeah, this is good for now. And then you guys are going to say to me, well, you can't say that. And I'm going to be like, fuck you. I quit. You know? So, but it's cool because I said to them, I'm training with one of my oldest and dearest friends in martial arts, Michael Staggerwall. Now, Michael Staggerwall and I have been friends, like I said, for a very long time. I'm going to say, like, around anywhere from 77 to 79, we became friends, like, via tournament circuit. You know, like, he studied with Green Dragon, and they did Kung Fu and Ishinryu, and he did Judo and stuff like that, whereas I did Goju Karate. And he's back in the area. He just moved back from Texas, and he used to be the coach and the captain of the Texas you know, like, they have, like, the different states have the games. Like, New Jersey had the Garden State Games. Well, they had, like, the Texas State Games, and he was, like, the coach for the judo team. And, you know, he competed and stuff and won all kinds of medals. Very prestigious martial artist. He doesn't give himself enough credit. Anyway, he turned around, and he's back in the area, so I'm training with him again. Because I actually still want to get in there and fight. You know, I'm not wrestling anymore. My OCPD HID is, like, fucking kicking overtime. So I watch people fight, and I'm like, yeah, let's get in there and duke it. And I watch people fight, and I'm like, dude, you guys, like, fight like pussies. Like, nobody wants to hit anybody. Like, tap. Fuck that, man. Throw that reverse on. Hit that motherfucker. I'm not saying try and kill him, but hit the motherfucker. That's what a fight's about. Hit a bitch. Crack a bitch, you know? So, like, Mike, like, laughs at me because I watched Mike compete. Mike hadn't competed in a martial arts tournament in quite some time, and he, you know, he was going for grand champion and shit like that. So I was, like, popping for him. I was like, you go, Pooks. You go with your badass little fucking Japanese self, you know? So, and his daughter's very talented, too. Lindsay, she's extremely talented. So it's kind of cool. I've been working out with them. So anyway, make a long story short, I say something to Dimitri about, you know, because of the job that I have, I work for a publicly traded company like PNC Corporation. So evidentially, you know, obviously, you cannot film me there because of being publicly traded, as well as the confidentiality and financial information inside the building. So he was cool with that. So I said to him, well, why don't you film me and Mike Staggerwall working out in the dojo? And he was like, definitely. So I was like, that's cool. So I'm thinking, oh, that's cool. I could bring a friend in. You know what I mean? And then I was like, I got my friend Angel Pagan, who I work out with in the wrestling ring. And he was like, we could do that too. And I go, and actually, the three of us could all co-mingle with Art Palmer, you know, my husband. We could all co-mingle with one another and stuff like that. And what's cool about them is they want to film you at your home, like your home life. But they want to film you, like, you know, training and working out and at shows and different things like that. Like, I said to them, you can't film me at the bank building, but you can film me, like, getting ready for work with the suit or coming in maybe to the dojo or something in one of my business suits or something, because it's, like, fucking day and night if you saw it, you know? And he was, like, all for that. So I was like, cool, for the reality show and stuff like that. So I'm pretty excited about that. You know, like, PNC was cool about it, and they said, as long as I don't, you know, I can't do anything regarding PNC, they can't come in the building or anything like that because of, you know, confidentiality stuff and the level of clientele we have. And because, like, Hawthorne's like family wealth. That's, like, you know, trusts and things like that. The client's net worth is $20 million and above. So you can't have shit like that going on around there. And I totally respect and understand that. But, you know, what I do outside of that is my business. As long as, you know, I'm not, like, too fucking crazy and I'm like, yeah, I better not have caffeine that fucking day then.
And, you know, when you get it going, if you want to get these guys on to put it over, you know, be a pleasure.
Oh, yeah, I would love to. I mean, they're like, you know, I actually tried to get Mike Staggerwall on here tonight, and he's like, ah, I'm just an old grizzle, you know, martial artist, you know, but, like, this guy was, like, a world-class champion, you know, and that's the thing. I laugh because I watch, this is the difference between martial arts and wrestling. You watch the martial artists, and they're very humble, like, the ones that I'm friends with, like Mike McFarlane and Mike Staggerwall, they're world-class champions and stuff, and they're like, ah, you know, I just did this, that, the other. Like, Mike Staggerwall was rated from like 1982 to like 1984 in a magazine called Karate Illustrated. He was always in the top two for fighting, weapons, kata. Like, he was an all-around champion. You know, McFarlane, he did a lot of world tournaments over in, like, Italy and things like that, that in England, and he won. So, like, they did very, very well for themselves, and they're very humble and modest. you go to a wrestler, and he's like, yeah, I worked this show in Scranton, dude, and I won. And I'm like, dude, it's fucking fake. I punch you in the fucking nuts, you're going to fold like a sofa bed, you know? Like, I laugh at the mentality and stuff. But the reason why, too, I really wanted Mike to come on here is Mike Stagger was actually born in Japan, and he trained in the judo dojos over there. And, like, listen to him talk, it's really cool because he says, you know, like, with the traditions and all that we incorporated in the wrestling schools over here actually came from those martial arts dojos over in Japan. That's the cool thing. That's what a lot of people don't realize. How these wrestlers, like, how some of these wrestling schools, like the Monster Factory and like, you know, Stu Hart, and all, how they trained, you know, with conditioning and different things like that, you know, that's how they train in the martial arts dojos over in Japan. So that's why I really wanted Mike to go on there because, you know, like him and I talk all the time, and, you know, he talks about how you're supposed to respect your senior students and grandmasters and stuff like that. Like, in wrestling, you're supposed to respect your veterans and your, you know, and stuff. So it's like that mentality really came from Japan, and people don't realize that. So that itself is a very interesting story for the diehard wrestling fans or people that are just interested in various cultures. So that's why I wanted to bring him on here, but he was being a modest fuck tonight.
Did he ever do the tournaments at the Garden?
You know why? He traveled so much. That's something you would have to ask him. Honestly, that's something. I mean, he went all over the world. I mean, he's in Bahamas, he was in England, he's been to Taiwan, he's been all over the place. And I love it because when you meet him, very humble, very polite, respectful man. And I laugh, like him and Michael McFarland, they're very respectful, very polite men, but you piss them off. And I look at people, I'm like, they're two dangerous motherfuckers you're looking in the eyes of. See, I'm crazy, we all know I'm fucking crazy. They're silent crazy. That's even deadlier.
Well, the reason I asked about the Garden thing was because when I was working at Liquidators, they must have been having a tournament. A bunch of these guys wandered in because we were open like 7 o'clock in the morning.
Right.
So I started talking to them, and they were like giving me like, what does this guy know? And then I picked up this box, and I looked at the guy, and I go, that's your picture on here. It was like one of those the Ocean Shores boxes.
Oh, yeah?
So these guys were basically, you know, once they realized I wasn't some fucking Mark Jerkoff, I started talking, you know, they were telling me, oh, how fucked up Jackie Chan was, how Sammo Hung's knees are all blown out, why does other guys never made it over here, all this cool shit.
Oh, that's kind of cool. Yeah. That is. That's really, really cool. See, I love stuff like that. Like, I'll talk, you know what's the sin? I'll talk to Johnny Valiant all the time. I mean, I will pick his brain to this day, even though I don't do shows and stuff, but I pick his brain to this day because that guy is just a book of knowledge, and he did not become a fucking, you know, Hall of Famer. I know people say, oh, WWE Hall of Fame's bullshit, but he's in that Pro Wrestling Hall of Fame too, you know, and he didn't get the reputation from being a schlub. Like, he's very fucking smart, and he knows how to travel smart, and you know, that's another thing. Like, these kids nowadays, and even, like, you know, back in the 90s and shit, they didn't know how to travel. Like, they never were taught. Like, you can always tell what quality of trainer you had. Like, when I was taught how to travel, how to eat on the road, how to negotiate my money, you know, what time I should arrive. Like, Murdoch would say to me, don't eat after 2 o'clock. The reason why you don't eat after 2 o'clock is because if something don't agree with you and you get the shits, you don't want to shit yourself in the ring. Well, that makes fucking sense, you know?
Yeah.
And he would say, you know, negotiate your price this way, you know, like say, you know, like if they say, hey, listen, I want you to work a show, you'd be like, oh, okay, well, what do you want me to do, this, that, and the other. And, you know, listen to what they're saying. Don't agree to everything. Like, if you don't like something, say, well, no, I don't want to do that, or I don't want to do this, or something like that, you know. So it was really, really cool, and I was very blessed and fortunate with the people. Like, even Carluzzo, as a promoter, was very smart because what he did was he learned from the veterans. He, too, like traveling and where to go to eat and different things like that, you know. And most of the guys, they go to fucking diners or truck stops. Like, they didn't go to McDonald's or Burger King. They went somewhere to get a real meal, so they weren't eating too much fatty foods. They were eating good foods and stuff like that, you know. So, like, I watch these kids nowadays, and I watch them. They're in the locker room, and they're fucking eating cheesesteaks and fries and pretzels and drinking soda. You know, sodas and different things. Like, I'll watch April Hunter, she'll eat a Chobani, or I'll watch Nikki Rocks, and she'll eat, like, some ground turkey or something. You know? Mercedes don't eat anything before she wrestles. I don't eat after 2 o'clock. As a matter of fact, I 9 times out of 10, when we were doing WSU shows, we would be on the road around 12 o'clock. So I would get up at 8 in the morning, get something to eat, and then I would turn around, I wouldn't have nothing until I was done that night. And you know, those WSU shows, a lot of times, can get over to like 10, 11 o'clock at night. So from like, you know, from like, say, 8 o'clock or no later than 12 o'clock in the afternoon till like, you know, 11, 12 o'clock. So a good 12 to 15 hours, I didn't have nothing to eat because I didn't want anything in my system. And I'm lying, because I would have water, or, you know, if I was a little fatigued or tired from whatever, I would do a little bit of sugar, like a Cherry Coke or like a Diet Dr. Pepper, you know, something with the caffeine to do, you know. And then when I was done wrestling, I would always drink 2 bottles of water or something like that, you know, just to replenish and shit. But these kids don't do that nowadays. Like, I watch these girls. It's not the guys. The guys are really good. It's the girls. I watch the girls now, and they just eat, like, shit food, and they're sitting there and, you know, eating hoagies, and I'm thinking, I don't want to fucking smell onions on your breath, you motherfucker. Like, seriously? I think about it. You know, your fucking hands smell like the hoagie and your fucking breath. I don't want to smell that shit when I'm in the fucking ring. And you know what else, too? They don't brush their fucking teeth. They don't fucking gargle. They don't put deodorant on. I'm like, you dirty fucking whores. I'm like, seriously? FDS don't mean forget the soap. You know? I'm like, when I wrestle people, I always, well, of course, you know, before you leave the house, you brush your teeth and gargle and all, but I would get there, I would brush my teeth, I would gargle, and then, you know, I would drink water, or if I had, like, soda or something, I didn't want to offend anybody, I would always chew mint, you know, mint or gum, and I would brush my teeth again. Like, I would always put deodorant on, and, you know, right before I go out, and try and be respectful, and you get in the ring, you wipe your feet in case you pick something up on the ground or the thing, you don't want to bring it in the mat and hurt somebody, cut somebody. They don't do any of that shit, because they're not fucking taught, because they're not taught by the right people. You know? If you watch the old days, when the old-timers would get in the ring, they would wipe their feet. They always wipe their feet. They wipe it on the steps, or they wipe it on the outside of the apron before they get in the ring. I do it. I do it to this day.
Oh, yeah, I've seen that.
I do it to this day. Even if I'm going in to work out in a ring, or I'm going on a karate tournament match, a referee or something, I always wipe my feet on the outside in case I pick something up in my shoes, because I try and be respectful that way.
Like you said, everything's changed.
Yeah. It really has. It gets watered down. You know, like it's funny, because when I was talking to my buddy Mike Staggerwell, we were talking about martial arts, and we were saying how much it's watered down. Well, just everything anymore is so watered down. Like, martial arts is watered down because people make it a business, and they try and make a living off of it, you know. Whereas, like, my buddy Mike Staggerwell, my buddy Mike McFarlane, and like Grandmas, you know, like some of the Grandmasters and stuff, they teach from the heart, not from the wallet. You know, they don't make a ton of money off it. They want to share their knowledge and their experiences with people. You know, they don't want to just, you know, throw a black belt on somebody because they were there for 2 years and gave them a couple $1,000. And that's what happens, is people grab people's money, promise them the sun, moon, and stars. Like, for instance, this one woman over at the Rite Aid where I live, her son went to wrestling school, and I'm like, why is he going to wrestling school? Is he going to wrestle? And she said, I said, tell him, don't bank on all your money that you're going to make it big time. It's harder now than it was back then. There's no territories. She's like, well, he's going to referee. So then he's refereeing. Next thing you know, he's having a wrestling match. Well, he sold a bunch of tickets, and then after he sold the tickets, he's like, am I going to referee? And they're like, oh, no. And now they're blowing him off. They gave him his one match to fill the obligation. He sold a bunch of tickets, didn't get fucking paid. I'm like, are you shitting me, dude? Like, seriously?
That's what that guy Frank Goodwin used to do out in Long Island, to get all these ticket sellers.
He's down in Florida now. You know that, don't you?
Oh, yeah. I don't know what. Is he still promoting down there? There's all kinds of weird shit happening. Were you on that card when Balls Mahoney was puking all over the arena?
You know what? I never worked for Frankie Goodman because he never did nothing personal to me, but I heard he was a lousy pay. And I'm like, I am not going up to fucking Long Island or New York and somebody fuck me on a pay, because then I'm going to go to jail for murder.
Yeah, right. Didn't he get in trouble? He lost his license up there or some shit? That's why he's in Florida?
I don't know. I would be a liar. I know he's not in great health. I saw that on Facebook that he's not. But, you know, that's fucking Facebook. You know, people post.
Yeah.
Frankie actually posted. He said he wasn't in the greatest of health. But I don't know. I don't know. Like, he was talking about wanting to do an all-women's promotion down there. And I'm like, now that's, like, the hottest thing. Everybody wants to do an all-women's promotion. Like, seriously? There's not enough strong talent out there to do an all-women's promotion in areas.
Did Mercedes quit altogether?
No, she works down in Florida and stuff. She's caught back, you know? Yeah. She's caught back now. I mean, don't forget, that girl's had some shoulder injuries and different things, you know? She's in her 30s, you know? You wake up one day and you say, you know what? I've had enough. And when it's, for me, it wasn't fun anymore. It wasn't fun in the sense that I'm not saying not to take it seriously, but what I'm saying is you either work with people that just didn't give a fuck and didn't care about their appearance or anything, or you work with people that were so fucking serious that they literally, if they missed a spot, would shit a brick and it would throw the match off, the harmony of the match off. And it just, for me, it just wasn't fun because a lot of my friends were retiring and getting out of the business. And then when Luna died, that was just like a fucking kick to the fucking uterus again for me. And, you know, because her and I were tagging, and we weren't just tagging at WSU, we were tagging all over. And, you know, it was just, when that happened and I just saw this major talent fucking just take her life, I'm like, I'm done. I said to Mick, I'm done. And he said, just give me this one more thing, and then I'll, you know, and then he's like, I want you commissioner because you can talk and you can get the people interested. You're a people person. You have charisma, this, that, and the other. He's like, and I was like, well, and he actually paid me more to be a commissioner than he did as a worker. That was the funny part of it all. I mean, you know, Mick always took care of you. He always gave you a copy of your matches and stuff like that.
Oh, yeah.
But, and he was a good dude. I really liked working for him. Besides him, I would have to say my other two favorite promoters I ever worked for was Dick Karakoff and Dennis Carluzzo. They were the best to work for. They really were. You know, I really enjoyed them.
Well, when you told them Mick I wanted out, I was one of the guys that actually said to him, I said, you know, you'd be a fool to let her go when you can use her as a you know, whatever commentator, because I think I said, you know, because Cindy was going to go out the same time, and I says her and Cindy as a commentator would be dynamite. So I don't know whatever happened with that.
She was doing it, and then they didn't. Once they, you know, when they came to Jersey, they used her a couple times, and then they didn't use her no more.
Yeah, that moving to Long Island killed it too.
Well, you know what the hard part was the summertime because of everybody going to the shores up in New York and stuff like this. So that was hard. That was a nice building, though. That was nice because it had plenty of parking. It had, you know, two locker rooms. You know, it had the backstage, and then it was good. I liked that building. I thought it was a nice building. I honestly liked that building. I liked Gino Caruso's building too. I liked that building a lot too. The one that we went to when it was upstairs. What the fuck was the name of that place?
Ace. I liked that building. That was a good little arena.
Yeah, that was another good building. I mean, Mick had some good buildings, but I think he did Long Island because it was closer to home for him and it was easier and stuff like that. Like, when he started going out there, I started seeing the signs on the wall that he was losing interest.
Yeah. It's a shame. He treated everybody right.
He did. And, you know, I still talk to Mick. And, like, when I worked for WEW, they treated me well. And before WEW came along, there was GLOW. And that was Steve, the sound guy, and Dan Colwell, the two of them. They were very, very good to me. They always treated me with the utmost respect, and I always appreciated that. So I would go beyond the call of duty for them. So if they said, Amy Lee, I need you to go out there and rev the crowd up, or Amy Lee, I need you to stay till the end of the night and do something, I would do it wholeheartedly. I wouldn't complain because they treated me so well. And they really did treat me really well. And I always say to this day that it was GLOW, Gorgeous Ladies of Outrageous Wrestling, that really put me on the map, and then, you know, getting noticed because they did that one pay-per-view over at the old ECW Arena in Philly. And then WEW took over. They kind of, like, Colwell and Steve kind of went separate ways. And WEW, they used me every fucking show they had. Like, I was their ultimate heel. And I loved it because that's what you need. You need one major ultimate heel, and then you need a bunch of baby faces. So they could have one fucking heel like me, and everybody else be a baby face. You know? And whoever was with me was automatically a heel. You know, and that's what you need. That's old school wrestling. You know what I'm saying? Like, whoever, it was so funny because if Amy Lee was in the ring, you knew somebody was getting fucked up. And then next thing you know, I had ODB with me, so it was me and ODB against these other girls. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So it was kind of cool. It was really, really cool that way. And they always treated me good. They always paid me very well. And they were in Philly, and they would always say, you know, you got to stay overnight at the hotel because we want everybody together. And I'm like, I got to work the next day. So, like, I remember one morning I was, the girls were getting done partying at, like, 7 in the morning, and I'm like, rolling, I'm like walking out in the suit, and they're like, where the fuck you going? I was like, I gotta go to work. And they're like, I said to the simple girl, I'm going to court. She goes, you're going to court? And I said, yeah, I gotta go to the, I said, I gotta go over to the law firm, and then I gotta go to court. She goes, what the fuck did you do? And I looked at her and I go, nothing, it's my job. And she's like, what? Francine's like laughing. She's like, dude, she works for a law firm, she's paralegal. Like, a lot of people didn't know that. Like, even the workers thought I was like some kind of like biker chick or mechanic or something. Like nobody knew what I really did for a living except my closest friends. So that was funny because I kind of like worked the workers, you know?
Yeah, when you first met me, you worked me. I thought you were, you know, off the bike.
I know. Everybody does. But you know what? Yeah. That's just part of selling your gimmick. Like, yeah. I always say to people, I never claimed to be the greatest wrestler in the world. And I was more because of my character. People wanted me to brawl more than wrestle. Okay, fine. You know, they let me do my leg drops and a couple of hip tosses and this, that, and the other. But, you know, they mostly wanted me to brawl. Okay, that's fine. I don't have a problem with that. Saves my body. With my character, I used to always say I never was the world's greatest wrestler, but I could cut a fucking promo better than anybody. My gimmick was more believable than anybody. My charisma was off the fucking hook, and I could work a fucking worker or promoter with a blink of an eye because I had everybody fucking believe, and I was this foul-mouthed, kick-ass biker chick that worked at some fucking mechanic shop that was on probation. Because I would be like if I came late to a show because of my real job, the promoters, I would say to them, listen, I'm going to be late. You know, I'm coming from the law firm. So they automatically assumed that I was, you know what I mean? Like, I didn't say, oh, I'm coming from work. I said, I'm coming from the law firm. I said, listen, I'm coming from the law firms. I got to talk, you know, I got to do something with the lawyers. And that's how I would say it. Like, I did a roundabout way. So they just assumed, eh, what the fuck she do this time and stuff. Because I remember I was down at Froggy's in Delaware, and I walked in, and I was like, yeah, I'm on the list. And they're like, the guy looked at me and goes, yeah, right. And I go, no, seriously, dude, I'm on the list. I said, no, seriously, I'm on the list. I was trying to be nice. And the guy goes, no, yeah. I go, hey, you fucking jerk off. I was like, my fucking name is right there. It's Amy fucking Lee, you cocksucker. And he looked and he goes, oh, Miss Lee. I'm so-. I said, my fuck you. Amy Lee's my first name, you stupid motherfucker. And fuck you is my last name. You know, like, I went off on a guy and cut a promo. What a fucking guy. He's like, look at him. He's like shitting a brick like I'm going to fucking beat him with a chair or something. I was laughing my ass off because I looked over to Art and I went, Art, I just worked the fucking, I said, I just worked the fucking security. He goes, yeah, that's good. That's what you want to do. Like, I had everybody believe, and that was what I was really about. And then I would come out with Artie would have, like, local 692 shirts and shit. So I would grab them because we were on TV in the Philly area at the time. So I would wear those shirts. And, like, Artie's union guys are all watching. They're like, yo, dude, that's my fucking local. And they're like, who's that fucking chick? So they're all asking. So it was funny because Art's sitting there at a union meeting with his two best friends, Bill Battersby and Bill Keevy, who make Artie look very petite. And we all know Artie's a pretty big dude. So they turn around, and they're all sitting there, and they're like, yeah, somebody says, yeah, I got a question. They're like, we see this chick on this wrestling show, and she's wearing our colors and all this other stuff and all. So, you know, Wayne's like, well, I don't know who it is. I haven't seen it yet. If you give me footage. So Bill Battersby and Bill Keevy look at Artie, and they go, should we handle this? And Art goes, go ahead. They go, well, what's it to you? Is she disgraced? They go, no, man, we want to know who she is. She's a bad motherfucker. We like her, man. It's like, she wears our colors proud. They go, that's fucking Artie Palmer's old lady. And they're like, what? And so I come, but when they realized it was me, they were shocked because when I come to the Christmas parties, you know, you're dressed nice, blouse, pants, you know, blazer, heels. They're like, no way, Artie, man. We were like, who's this fucking badass biker chick? He goes, eh, it's Amy. And they're like, no way. So the next time Artie had a union meeting, he said, I want you to come up. So I came up on a Fat Boy Harley. I'm like riding up there, and we come up there. It was me and Scotty Bigelow's brother Maddie. We rode up there together because I was like, dude, you know, because he rides with the breed. He's in a biker club. I was like, dude, you got to fucking ride with me. He's like, all right. So we like worked it all out, and I come pulling up and shit. And I walk in, I go, oh, they're like in a union meeting. Like, they told Wayne already, you know, the business agent, and they told Tommy Clive, the business manager, and they said, Look, I go, who the fuck's bitching about me wearing their colors? I'll skull fuck that cocksucker. You know, like, I started cutting a promo, like, fuck this, fuck that, and all. And he was just like, everybody was like, ah, no, I'm like, yeah, what's up? Like, they all popped and shit. I must have signed autographs all night. And I looked at my guy, I know you motherfuckers are paying for these pictures. I mean, people were, like, throwing me $10, $20, and they were just grabbing a picture. I mean, more money that night signing autograph than I did my whole fucking 24 years. It was great. I, like, laughed my ass off. I'm like, shit, you can't make this shit up.
We've been known for like almost an hour.
Fucking God, you motherfucker. Just when we're getting warmed up, you fucking motherfucker.
Hey, you can come.
Everyone, I put Todd the producer over, so he's going to go home with Rosie Palm and her five daughters and spank the monkey tonight.
Hey, we can always get together after the first of the year. You know, you're always welcome.
I know. No, dude, seriously, I want to, and I want to bring Mike Staggerwall on here. I got to get this motherfucker on here. I'm serious, because, like I said, it's For the people that are listening, you know, the dojos over in Japan, the everything in America incorporated that, like the schooling and stuff like that. People don't realize that, and I just think it would be really cool for him to, you know, do the comparison, because they are very parallel. You know, parallel. That's the thing people don't realize. So.
All right, well, we got to get out of here. So, hey, again, thanks for coming on. It was a great show, and
Merry
Christmas, Happy New Year.
Merry Christmas, and have a kick-ass of a New Year.
You too. We'll be in touch. We'll talk, okay?
Peace.
Okay. Bye.
Short and sweet with 42nd Street Pete. Only on Jackalope Radio.